While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and a warm welcome to everyone tuned in from every corner of the country. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of meaningful conversation and bold national dialogue. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Radar News Analysis, the program where we move beyond the headlines to understand what truly shapes Namibia. It is Wednesday, the 3rd of December 2025, and the time is 5 minutes past the hour, 1300 hours. Now we are officially in the final stretch of the year, a season where decisions carry more weight, where accountability sharpens, and where the realities of governance, the economy, and the community welfare collide with both public expectations and political promise. Now across the country today, conversations are shifting from end-of-year government performance to the pressure on public systems, from the cost of living strain on households to the critical leadership choices shaping Namibia's industrial, mining, and energy future. It is a week where the questions grow louder, and so must the clarity. And that's what we do here on The Radar. Isn't just news, it's a lens, a space where we dissect rather than the policies behind government actions, interrogate the forces behind national decisions, and explore how those developments affect you. Whether you're navigating the midday traffic, sitting in an office, or listening from the heart of rural Namibia. Now, from now until 14:30, expect sharp analysis, grounded insights, and voices that matter. We'll bring you expert commentary, policy breakdowns, and lived experiences that cut through the noise and help make sense of the moment we are in. You can catch us live across Eagle FM frequencies, stream us via the Eagle FM website, and also download the Eagle FM app and stay connected through our WhatsApp channel for instant updates and behind the scenes conversations. So certainly it's midweek, the stakes are high, and the national story continues to unfold. This is your space to think, reflect, and engage. This right here is On The Radar, where context meets the country's future. Let's get right into today's top stories. President Letumbona Ndaitwa has appointed Modestus Amute as the new Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, marking one of the most significant cabinet changes since the beginning of the administration. The appointment effective immediately has been made in accordance with Article 35 of the Constitution. The appointment effective immediately has been made in accordance with Article 35 of the Constitution, which empowers the head of state to select ministers from the National Assembly to steer the government's executive functions. Honorable Amute assumes leadership of a ministry that sits at the heart of Namibia's economic transformation agenda. Now, this portfolio now includes oversight of the country's industrialization drive, the booming mining sector, and the rapidly evolving energy landscape, especially at the time when Namibia is positioning itself as a continental leader in critical minerals and renewable energy, as well as green hydrogen development. Now, Amute is no stranger to public administration. He previously served as Deputy Minister of Information Communication Technology, where he worked on improving digital access, cybersecurity frameworks, and government communication strategies. And before that, he served in the National Assembly, where he chaired a standing committee tasked with oversight on governance and service delivery matters. His earlier roles as regional leadership level further solidify the breadth or the depth of his experience. Now we're going to get in touch with political analyst Ben Mulongeni to interrogate more on this appointment. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And we are back, and now we are joined telephonically in studio by political analyst Ben Mulongeni. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Ben, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis. Hello, Mr. Ben?
Yes, I don't hear you.
You're on air now. Good afternoon to you.
Yes, I'm on air. I don't hear you properly.
Okay. Can you hear me better now? Hold on. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, but very poorly. You are very far.
And how about now?
Yeah, now, yes. Repeat again. Say something.
Okay. Welcome to All the Reading News Analysis.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Now, Mr. Ben, of course, we are here now to interrogate the appointment of the new Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, that is Modestus Amutse. Just what do you think about the President's appointment now to our new Minister?
Well, I think I have to answer this question reflecting on the reactions that was already raised in the morning to the media, particularly radio. Questions are being put as to, you know, why the minister without an experience, maybe as a minister or as a politician, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And issues like he's just a journalist. That's why they know him. Maybe they don't know him as a minister or those other things.
Yeah.
Okay, my own take is as follows. I'm going to raise 3-4 things to put this one into perspective. First, a minister's role is to develop or design policy directions. The minister's asset is an asset. It's not necessarily his qualifications in mining, his expertise in stones and other minerals, but with regard to this. Or a minister in any developmental sector does not help having a minister with all lots of qualifications if he does not have the right ideology, the right political, social, economic philosophy, the right economic ideology, as I started calling it, does not help. What does it mean? It does not help when you have a minister educated, particularly in the West, with a neoliberal approach or neoliberal outlook to the economy. The neoliberal outlook to economy is that government should not have a role to play in the, you know, development or economic sector. We don't want a minister who may say or agree or believes in the doctrine of oil is not ours. We don't need a minister in Namibia who believes that Namibia does not owe you anything. We don't need that one. We also don't need a minister who may tell people that fish quotas are not for everybody. And those can be any minister who may be well educated, but his ideology is wrong as far as Africa and Namibia is concerned. What does it mean? We have different ideology, different doctrine to economy, that private sector must play the major role. Investors, investors, investors. And I want to repeat what I said in the past on different platforms. Investors, being investor friendly and investors only in love with investors, investors do not come to a country to develop for you. Investors come to the country and make their money and pack and go. And even if they found out that they can make money without paying you a penny, they would do so. So the neoliberals are those who want to keep us where we were even before independence. We have a situation, historical situation, where people came from Europe, they robbed our land, they killed our people. If you are not giving your land away, they will kill you. And once they have killed you and taken your land and your mineral and your resources, they will make laws to protect those resources against yourself. That's what happened. And those laws that we have from the Romans up to now, from the colonial interests up to now, are those laws that have crafted, designed purposefully, deliberately to protect stolen things. And there are people who went to school and study those and they believe in them. So I don't think maybe President Tumbo looked at experience and qualifications, specialized in mining per se. Maybe as we heard her pronouncing herself, she's among African leaders are praised to say the minerals are ours. Oil and gas is ours. It's time we add values. And we should not, she repeated every day, we should not allow our miners to go unprocessed. For the first time, we are seeing a fresh air in the political climate. Yeah. And it's known when all those liberals were educated, they sold our airline, they sold Transnamib. They've been in the process of selling all national property, all public properties. Those are neoliberals. I don't know. Maybe we must ask Modesto something himself. Where does he stand as far as ideological, you know, political philosophy or economic philosophy, you know, barricade line that divide different politicians from, you know, from each other. Ask him how he thinks. And I believe the way I know him as a journalist, those are saying just a journalist. Journalists know better than anyone else because they've been dealing with different sectors. And they've been privileged to do so. That is also a plus, because you cannot say that all journalists, including yourself, cannot be appointed in the responsible position because you've just been a journalist. The opposite is true. When you are a journalist, you are forced to do research, to interview everybody, including the President of the United States of America, including the best medical doctor, including the best scientist, including even the moonwalker who went to the moon. Yeah, so the journalists will know better than any of those who are talking.
Exactly.
And there were so many ministers who have been in charge of different sectors, and that sector lose a lot of billions of money.
Regardless of their qualifications.
Actually, their qualification makes it worse because it teaches them to steal. Only a well-educated, knowledgeable person with the knowledge to teach, to cheat the rest. It does not help. So, at independence, my dear, when we got independence, all those ministers, including those who are talking, they've never been ministers before. They've never run an independent country before. Some were just coming from refugee camps. Others are former terrorists, a so-called by Africa, and they became ministers, and they were doing well, better than now, today, when there were so many people educated. So it takes somebody's heart, not somebody's expertise alone.
I appreciate that, Mr. Ben. Now, of course, this ministry is responsible for industrialization and economic diversification. Talk about the mining sector, where Namibia is obviously now the citizens not really understanding where exactly are we when we're talking about the oil and gas sector. So what qualities now in general would you say are needed in a leader who is going to oversee the Ministry of Industry, Mines and Energy at this critical time of Namibia?
At this critical time of Namibia, we need a Pan-Africanist. We need a nationalist, if not even a socialist-minded person.
Yeah.
We need that. We don't need neoliberals. We don't need them because they take us back to where we were before independence. Remember, I want to give you an example. Even in America, there are people who believe in solidarity, in the people-centered and people-oriented policies. It's just an issue of policy. Remember, there's a debate and a fight between the Democrats and the conservatives. I mean, the Republicans, they are conservatives in politics. There are people also in America who are saying that they need health care that is friendly, closer to the people. Others are believing, no, we cannot spend this thing, it's a waste of money. You see? So, at this level of the ministerial level, the minister does not need to go to the mines or, you know, study stones and check them. There are people.
Doesn't specifically.
The minister's role. Technically, yeah, and expertise. He must direct expertise actually to decide in terms of decision making, in terms of policy formulations, in terms of agreement that to be signed between Namibia and foreign investors. And those agreements must be in our terms. And President Tumba has expressed that one. But Mulongeni has been saying that for the last 25 years. I've been saying at different platforms that we need a factory, a plan between Kitmans and Usakos, or Kitmans and Marinda, that can be able to turn our stones into bread. That's what I said. And I'm happy that the president said that we cannot allow our minerals to go unprocessed. That's what I mean, to turn stones into bread.
Mm-hmm.
So we need somebody, because it doesn't help knowing everything, but the stones, we are selling them out.
Exactly.
And even the deal that we are negotiating, we are not benefiting anything. We don't want those who believe in commissions, that you negotiate to get the commissions, higher commissions, and then the percentages that we're supposed to get, they go to you, and you give a higher percent to the foreign investors. And government goes for nothing, and the people of Namibia, nothing. Now, listen, I even heard, and I want now at this English program, I heard Honorable Venandi speaking, praising Traore. And I think it's rather hypocritical. I can put it to him. I want to hear, he's my good friend.
Yeah.
Traore is doing this. Traore is doing wonderful things. But Traore came to power at the age of 34, 35. Yeah? If Traore started before that, applying or expressing his intention to become president, who would be given a chance? Who would have given him a chance? Maybe you are even older than him.
Yeah.
Nobody could give him a chance even to think that he, such a young boy, must become a president of Burkina Faso. But Traore, when he took power himself, not a single African president, including those who are talking in their position as ministers or former minister or member of parliament, not a single has done even 1% of what Traore is doing today. He did not take salary, Mr. President Traore. He transformed everything. He's developing agriculture, housing, hospitals. He decided not to take presidential salary, and he bought, just in week 1 year, a lot of tractors, over 400 of them, to the young people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want.
And this is somebody who doesn't have qualifications in all those things that he's actually having.
He's a soldier.
Mm.
So now you must understand, it's not about qualification at that level. Yes, a deputy director or a director or ECD, a director that you call permanent secretary and other directors, those must have qualifications.
Yeah.
But they need now visionary direction, visionary instruction, that while you are doing that, it must be arranged this way, the arrangement has been such a way that it benefits Namibians. That's why. And I'm happy that Namibia with the president even acquainted, when they are talking about a good president in Namibia now, when they mention Traore, they mention Netumbo. And who else, what kind of minister do you want her to appoint? Who? And Modestus Antse, particularly, to come into his defense as a person, I know him personally. He is such a journalist. When I don't have money to pay overtime for a reporter and the cameraman, I send what they should answer far as you know, the Middle East. Because my managers, they say, no, Madesu Anse is the only one capable, among those capable, mm-hmm. of filming and writing a report.
Interesting.
And if, yes, that's Madesu now, to know, for those who don't know, they think he's just a journalist. And he's filming and he's writing a report. And he reports from there, from Amman, from Tokyo, from Japan, all alone doing two jobs. Mm-hmm. See what hand does he have. See what kind of a person. And we don't pay him for two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And also supposed to pay a reporter and a camera person.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of the night, I had to call him to come so that he can accompany late President Nyoma to the funeral of the king of Jordan, Naman. So 3 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. because the Arab, they buried the person within 24 hours. There was no time to care for him to what, blah, blah, blah. And I was, called, please, we need, president is going, we need the reporter and whatever. I did not sleep that day. I had to run to go to this manager. Everybody said, no, we decided, please, doctor, we can only get Mandesu Samse. The only one in the whole country.
Imagine.
Now, such a person is capable. And one thing, if he had been sharing, rooms and space with Sam Nyoma, who has a developmental philosophy in terms of Karimbeza Railway and other Itunda, all those things, I never seen somebody who was so crazy, obsessed with developing projects in New York. And now all those ministers, all those who are talking, and never, nobody can come closer. And Mondesu has been always sitting next to New York. What does he talk to him? I know New York likes telling stories on development issues. He must have picked up something. It's a plus for him, for those who don't know, that can also assist in terms of thinking, in terms of philosophy. You understand, in terms of conceptualizing issues of development nature.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the fact that Modesto Amotse was number one on the Swapo Party's parliamentary list. Let's talk about that aspect as well. What does that say? I mean, obviously, with
it,
people.
It says about the character of a person.
Yes.
It says about the character of a person. They trust him, they know him. Remember? Not because by chance they don't know him.
Yeah.
They know him so well, yes. Being a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
They know he mingles with everybody, including SWAPO members. And remember, he's new to politics. He's new to politics in terms of active politics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But he came closer. That tells you that, people have seen something in him.
Mm-hmm.
And more than all those who are calling expertise.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why, if he's not experienced in ministry or whatever, why should people vote for him? Those are other things.
That's true.
It takes a lot.
Mm-hmm. What about his role of being a deputy minister of information communication technology, which prior to obviously the new administration, where he served as the deputy minister of that sector? How do you think perhaps his role in that aspect or his communication skills in that aspect will help with maybe trying to get companies, of course, to invest within our country here in Namibia?
That's also good for human relations as a former journalist and a former minister or deputy minister for communication. I've never been close to him, but I know him well. During his, tenure as a deputy minister, we see him here and there, but I know his human relations are quite good. And as a deputy, you will never really see how he shines, but I've seen him in his public engagement, his public communication, and I see his politics. It's a political humanity. It's a political solidarity in what I've said. And that's what matters today. And that's what Netumbo needs now.
Mm-hmm. Ben, I hear you. Your last words as we close off this interesting discussion, Tata Ben.
Yeah. Pardon, the last one, my last words.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my last words as we start judging, and I've seen some people actually saying things, I don't know, that apparently his wife was involved in that and that. But I don't think you have to judge him, based on his wife's dealings or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of you should we ask you, judge you because of what your wife do during their business or other things.
Mm.
Are you sure he knows what his wife is doing? I wish if all us could know what our wives are doing, including when they are cheating on us.
But I agree with you. Nobody should be judged on the basis of the character of their spouse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's my last word.
Okay. Mr. Ben Mulungeni, thank you so much for this. I appreciate your analysis on this, especially on the aspect that you see what a leader should bring on the table, especially those that are heading ministries. It's not necessarily the qualifications to say they should have studied geology or whatsoever for them to be able to head the Ministry of Mines or other ministries for that matter.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And there you had it from Ben Mulungeni. This is On the Radar News Analysis. Let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back to interrogate this topic much further. Now, should you be interested yourself in asking questions or perhaps airing your opinions or contributions, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito tanjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Time, Bali Heavy, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileco, Berewa, Branetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Matatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
We are back, of course, still speaking on the appointment of the new Minister of Industry, Mines and Energy. Let's take a listen to a conversation I got into with a political analyst, Ndumba Kamanya.
A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Ndumba Kamanya, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis yet once again.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Now, yesterday we just witnessed how the President of the Republic of Namibia appointed Modestus Hamutse as the new Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy. Just what do you make of this appointment at this particular point in time?
First of all, you have to consider the aspect that that ministry is a very strategic and important ministry for the government agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So the president probably considers the aspect that it cannot be run on an ad hoc basis by someone who's already having his own ministry. So I think that's why it became so imperative that it that the position must be filled.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what prompted the president.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, this we know that Modestus Amte was the deputy minister of Information and Communication Technology, that is ICT, prior to this. You know, so of course, was serving in the Parliament Standing Committee. But I want to also point out that he was number one on the Swapo Party's parliamentary list. What do you make of it, of this appointment coming now? Of course, we know the history that has happened in regards to this ministry throughout the year.
Are you saying that he was the number one on the list, right?
He was.
Yes. Well, when the president is considering to appoint someone,
mm-hmm.
they quite look at a wide range elements and aspects And one of those elements is the political consideration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes president rewards dedicated party members or party members that are loyal to the party and to the appointing authorities. So that's one aspect. And the second aspect is they look at experience and professional competence.
Yeah.
Is the person aligned his skills and his or her skills and experiences, are they aligned with the ministry itself in terms of the agenda of that ministry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they also look at the ethical and legal eligibility of that person that is being appointed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it constitutionally, is that in terms of age, citizenship, and all those kind of things, is this person meeting this requirement?
Yeah.
Is there any conflict of interest? If I appoint this person, it might create a conflict of interest. Security clearance. The person must be clean, more in particular, if the ministry deals with security-related issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and then there's an aspect of personal trust and working relationship. You know, is there a chemistry between that particular person and the appointing authority?
Mm.
You know, can I trust this person in terms of confidentiality and working as a team? And then lastly, I would say is a strategic government goal in the sense that as the president wants someone that will push his or her policy agenda.
Yeah.
So quite a number of elements that they consider.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I did notice is that I would say that the president did take a bit of a time in actually making this appointment. Why is it so necessary that presidents don't rush into making an appointment, say, to replace another minister, but rather carefully look at those qualities that you're talking about?
Yes. Remember that the president have to make sure, because they do vettings, more in particular, to make sure that the person they are appointing is really the right person. They consult party members, more in particular senior members, to ask for opinion. But of course, they're vetting to see that the person does not have anything that might create a scandal for the new government or mm-hmm. for the government.
Mm-hmm.
And but also they consider aspect of how to balance the regional representation
mm-hmm.
and the demographic representation, including gender and ethnic groups. So it's quite a lengthy process that you don't want to do it hush-hush, because it might come back and backfire on the appointing authority.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, this ministry is responsible for driving industrialization and economic diversification. Of course, we have been talking about the 6th National Development Plan, that is NDP-6. And of course, the president has been talking about value addition and the strengthening of local manufacturing capacity. Just what do you think Modestus has to bring on the table in this capacity, especially emphasizing small, medium enterprises and driving economic growth right here in Namibia?
Yeah. Well, one is a track record of integrity, because as I said, that you don't want to create scandals for the presidency.
Mm.
And it is important that he must, because, you know, the nature of that ministry one can easily be tempted, you know, to get bribes and all those kind of things, bring in your own networks and all those kind of things. So I think integrity is very important to make sure that you are doing everything right. And I think because, yes, the experience that he was the deputy minister in the ICT ministry, and also that he served on various parliamentary committees. So I think all those factors will come in handy when he in running the ministry. But he must also the aspect of leadership, because it's a big ministry, and I think it has a lot of staff and the employees. So leadership must also leadership and the management style will also determine whether he will run it successfully or not.
Indeed. And so, furthermore, what is it that you say we should perhaps, or things that maybe the new minister should put in place when it comes to driving national energy security and the country's ongoing energy transition? I think, course, we're not yet sure exactly where we are in terms of energy here in Namibia or the oil and gas. I think a lot of people are still wondering. Maybe those at the top understand, obviously, deeper than those on the ground. Those actually citizens themselves are still wondering where exactly are we going in terms of that aspect. So what do you think perhaps the new minister can bring on the table to bring everybody in on the loop on what's going on?
Yeah, well, to make sure that systems, processes, and institution within the ministry are strong, to make sure that they are not weakened by maybe internal dynamics. So I think that he should bring to the table to ensure that the systems and processes are strong, so that things can run smoothly in terms of implementation. He must also be very consultative with the various stakeholders that are involved, more in particular with the green hydrogen. And we know that some of the venues where those programs will be implemented has implication for cultural and social issues. So they need to be quite a wide consultation with the public. And then the issue of listening to what the experts are talking about, mm-hmm. and advising him,
yeah.
the analyst, what the idea is writing, but also listening to what the staff are telling him. So those are some of the things that make it easier for someone to run a ministry as large as that one. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that transparency and accountability must be seen.
Yeah.
And I think he must bring that out to make sure that things are done in an accountable manner, mm-hmm. And also that there is openness.
Indeed.
Yes.
Mr. Aduma Kamanya, perhaps your last word as we conclude on this interesting topic.
All the best to the new minister.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too early to judge, but we are watching and we are supporting him, whether indirectly through analysis like what we are talking here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, I wish him all the best.
Okay. Mr. Aduma Kamanya, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And there we had it from political analyst Ndumba Kamanya, also just giving his insights in regards to the appointment of the new Minister of Industry, Mines and Energy. Now, of course, prior to this appointment, Minister Modestus Amute was the chairperson of the Constitution, Legal Affairs and Petitions, and he is joining us right now via telephone. Very good afternoon to you, Minister.
Yes, good afternoon, and good afternoon to every Namibian who's listening.
Mm. It's such a pleasure to actually have you speaking to us right here on the Reader News Analysis. Congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. What do you say about this new appointment, Minister Modestus Amute, being now, of course, heading industrialization, mines and energy, considering that, of course, we are at the time where we're talking about the oil and gas, renewable energy, green hydrogen. What's your take on this appointment?
Well, everything new comes with its own dynamics, including challenges. I won't say that there will be no challenges when it comes to starting up with this new task, but what I can confirm is that I'm ready to face whatever challenges it involves. I should say I feel pleased to be appointed to this very important structure by Her Excellency the President. It's actually also a trust that I want to share with the Namibian people. Because at the end of the day, it was the Namibian people who elected me to Parliament, from where I was selected by Her Excellency the President to serve in this position. So I would definitely commit myself to serve the Namibian people with the utmost dedication that the people deserve, and also not to disappoint the trust of the Namibian people on me. There are certain areas that I will be looking at where I think we need to focus on. Quite a number of them. It's a complex ministry, talking about industries, industrialization itself, talking about energy, renewable energy, wind energy. You talk about mineral resources beneficiation. So there are a lot, and discovering of oil and gas. It's also, there are lots of areas where we have to concentrate on, but I don't fear this responsibility because I rely on the advice by the people of Namibia, including stakeholders representing different bodies that are in the mining sector, that are in the in the business sector, that are small and medium enterprises, or entrepreneurs. So I don't fear, because I only fear if I was alone. In this journey, I'm not alone. We are together. Yes.
Now, speaking about parliament elections, having been elected to parliament, you were number one on the parliament list for Swapo Party, of course. And now being appointed at this point in time, of course, the early appointees had happened in March. And of course, what happened in between the, and now here we are in December, you are appointed as the Minister of Industry, Mines and Energy. Just what do you think about that? And what's probably your take or your say to other people out there? I know sometimes we're talking on our reality of how sometimes we expect certain things perhaps or anticipate certain things and they don't happen. But then still, I would say you were still grounded and still continuing with what was given you at hand until this appointment took place. So what's your take on that aspect?
No, thank you very much. Indeed, you see, what is interesting is that when we stand for election, to be elected to parliament, for instance, or to any other institutions, we personally, I was not standing to be appointed as a minister. I was standing on that list to go to parliament and to be given any responsibility that exists. So I was entrusted with the responsibility of chairing the Standing Committee on Constitutional, Legal Affairs and Petitions, which I chaired with my skills and dedication. And I was happy because I know that we cannot all serve as ministers. And to me, it was also a good step by Her Excellency the President to downsize the ministerial positions, mm-hmm. because that has been the outcry of the people. So there are times that we have to face the reality, and this was the reality of the day, to say, okay, we can still service the people with the number of ministers that we have, instead of enlarging or keep the normals. But really, to be honest, I was not disappointed, number one, because I had always trust, not only in Her Excellency the President, but also in the party itself, which I serve, the Swabo Party, and the government in general. What I have been seeing is to do the best wherever I find myself. When I was at Parliament, I said, I must do the best where I am.
Mm-hmm. Now, having served as the Deputy Minister of ICT and also with your experience as a journalist, what particular aspect of that portfolio do you think is positioning you, will help you actually contribute to your new role now?
You see, I believe in a collective effort. You know, collective effort means that my strength is the people of Namibia. That is through consultation, by receiving advices by the people of Namibia from different sectors. I must listen to every person. So that is my strength, number one. Number two, I believe that I was well prepared when I attended the different institutions of higher learning,
mm-hmm.
To take up positions of high level. So with my legal experience as well, I think I'm able to, not think, but I'm able to understand the mandate of the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I understand the mandate of the ministry, what I should do is actually to combine our efforts with the personnel that I found here, because most of them have been here probably for 30 years and more or less. But mm-hmm. you see, these combined efforts will actually build our strength as employees of this ministry, and me being a political appointee. So this combination to me is my strength, and number two. And number three, NDP 6 is very clear. We know the objective of NDP 6. And I also know the country. I am a politician. I know what the people need. I know that people need electricity. Let's talk about rural electrification, for example. Yes. I know about industrialization. I know that we don't need our raw materials to leave the country unprocessed, because yes. we have to process them locally to create employment for our youth, but also to add value to our commodities so that we sell them as finished products. That would be one of, I mean, my third strength, if not number one strength as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of areas that we definitely have to look at. For instance, to develop the national strategy on energy supply security, we can also capitalize on positive price developments to revive uranium exploration, and there are quite a number of them. For instance, also to look at the rent control board, so that we come up with a bill that would actually assist our youth, especially those with low income,
mm-hmm.
or in the low income groups. We know that rentals nowadays is a very, very expensive something, and we have to assist our people actually to be able to afford accommodation, especially in cities. The income level of our people is not that high, but mm-hmm. the rental fees, I'm telling you, is very exorbitant. So that will also be one of my priorities as a minister, to ensure that we bring up a bill in Parliament, table a bill in Parliament, that will definitely regulate the rent control board in order to assist our low-income groups to be able to stay somewhere comfortably and also decently. So there are a lot. And also to strengthen our SMEs in general.
Yes.
And especially our small miners. You know, we have quite a number of them. All they need is just to build their capacity through different dimensions, because capacity has different dimensions. It could be skills transfer or development, but it can also be in other forms, like for instance to provide equipment or to them so that they can do what they have to do, to explore, to do exploration, maybe to do mining in general. much easier than the way they are doing now, because by doing so, we will also be able then to create employment, because they will be able to have other people working with them on that sector of mining. And also to look at what the buyers, mostly from outside the country, do to our minerals, our mineral beneficiation, like I said. It's very, very important. Look at Kunene, for instance.
Yeah.
We don't want the minerals to leave that area continuously uncontrolled, because, you see, a foreigner would come and say, I offer to buy this stone in its raw form, the way it is. But in that stone, you know, there are different minerals. Maybe it will have a content of copper, maybe silver, maybe gold in that one stone. But this buyer is only buying for one commodity. For instance, he's saying, I want to buy copper.
Yeah.
And then he's supplied with all these stones, raw stones.
Mm.
But he knows that going back there, he will start to isolate these commodities from this one stone and actually make more money.
Absolutely.
And this is what we say, we have to cap. We have to cap this. We have to, if it's a policy, I will make sure that policy is in place.
Mm, very interesting.
If it's just control mechanism, we will make sure that those mechanisms exist.
Mm-hmm. Honorable Minister, from me personally, I think I would just say I appreciate your time, and obviously I do appreciate how you are always ready to engage, especially with the media, perhaps because you also come from, you have been in the media, yourself. And I just, wish the very best in your new role and continue also to be available, especially to us when we want to get information from you.
Thank you very much. And, I would appreciate, all the Namibian.
Okay.
People.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And there you had it from the new Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, Modestus Amutse. Also just sharing, I think I want to appreciate also sharing with us his plans for the ministry. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, you are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis, your weekday guide and interrogation into the stories that are shaping our nation. Let's pause right here. We'll be back shortly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, dora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, of course, this is the part where we tell you what's happening outside the borders of the country. Let's start off in South Africa, where the National Treasury has proposed 20% tax on all online gambling.
Now, the National Treasury recently released a discussion paper calling for a 20% national tax on the gross gambling revenue of all licensed and unlicensed online gambling activities. The Treasury reckoned the tax could add up to 10 billion rand on the fiscus. However, opposition to the National Treasury's proposed 20% national tax on online gambling is growing sharply. Industry bodies, legal experts warned that the plan is unconstitutional It's economically destructive as well. For more on this, we are now joined by a leading expert in gambling law and the founder of Weitzman's Attorneys, Garen Weitzman. Garen, thanks for joining us. Good to have you on the program for this issue. Garen, are you still there? Gambling and illegal gambling is something talking to us very easily. It looks like there's something wrong with the connection at the moment. There are big issues around this particular topic. And it's one where, you know, I mean, online gambling and illegal gambling is something that we've got to be very, very concerned about. And I mean, when we look at some of the issues around it, you know, it's, I suppose, Treasury framing this as an easy 10 billion rand boost to the fiscus. That's what they are hoping to find. And I imagine from a legal and regulatory standpoint, there may be a number of issues. And that's what we're hoping that Garen will talk to us about, because online gambling, whichever way you look at it, and it's not only in like the online gambling sense that you know, but I mean, I often think about what our kids do and the gaming that our kids do on some of these programs like Roblox or whatever. That's also considered to be some form of gambling. But anyway, I think we've got Garen back. Garen, can we? Yes, it looks like we got you. You're moving. That's a good sign. Garen, talk to us about your reaction when you heard about this proposed 20% national tax on online gambling.
Look, I was shocked, but not shocked at the same time. You know, national government has for some time been, I suppose, playing a game would be the right term as far as trying to get control of online gambling in the country. And when I say get control, I mean economic take away regulation from the provinces. This has been going on for quite some time. And in fact, it had a run-in with the National Council of Provinces, given the substantial role that the provinces play in the regulation of gambling in terms of our constitution. In fact, provinces regulate gambling on a day-to-day basis, and they are the primary taxers of gambling, gambling regulatory activity. So I saw it sort of as a continuation of what's been going on the last few weeks, where the National Gambling Board has been quite vociferous in its view of what should be done in relation to online gambling. By the same token, I was surprised because I didn't, A, expect them to actually go this route, and B, the taxes that have been proposed are actually extortionate. They're completely out of kilter with anything that is reasonable or sensible in the circumstances.
Yeah. So obviously at the heart of this, I mean, Treasury has framed this as an easy 10 billion rand boost to the fiscus. That's what they, I suppose, are hoping for. But if we look at the regulatory standpoint, is this number even realistic?
Yeah, I think the number's realistic. I jotted down a few points before we went on air, you know, that emerged from the National Gambling Board's recent annual report, which gives us a good overview of what's going on in the industry. And of the 74.5 billion rand in gross gambling revenue that was generated across all gambling modalities in this country, 52 billion was through the betting industry, and a lot of that is in relation these days to online games and betting on the outcome of casino games, which have become incredibly popular.
Yeah.
So I certainly think that, you know, an aspiration to raise additional taxes as a result of it, you know, on the face of it appears like there's some sort of golden goose to tax. And, you know, that saw quite a substantial year-on-year growth, as we've seen for many, many years in this country, particularly post-COVID. However, there's a bigger problem here. The first thing is, and I probably best read this, because the Treasury says in its proposal that the main objective of the reform would not be to raise further revenue, but rather to discourage problem and pathological gambling and their ill effect. That's the first thing.
Mm.
So Treasury has come and said, well, it's not to raise revenue. We've got a particular purpose in mind, which I think any experts in this industry and industry participants will tell you that's just simply not going to be the case.
Yeah.
The second thing is, you know, raising an additional 20% tax on top of what is already being paid by operators in the industry really will kill the golden goose. I think what people need to remember is that that's on top of roughly 6.5% of GGR that is already paid to the provinces,
Mali
deemed VAT at the prevailing VAT rate on beds, compliance costs, annual licensing costs, corporate tax, withholding taxes on dividends, CGT on share transactions, PAYE for the thousands of people that are employed, and it goes on and on and on. In fact, what we've seen, and I think Ulrich Benson, the CEO of Sun International, said this recently when Sun International came out and really slammed the proposed tax, is that what we've seen is that, in fact, it decreases the opportunity for government to raise revenue. Mm. So I think, you know, Treasury is saying, well, we're doing this not to raise revenue, but by the same token, you know, I can't see it as any way other than to raise revenue.
Yeah.
What a lot of people also don't understand is the margins are not that high in relation to the you know, for operators. And in fact, what's going to happen, and we've seen it time and time again around the world where there's been a crazy sort of raise in the taxes, is that it puts people out of business and in fact kills the golden goose. It doesn't actually increase what's available. It reduces revenue in a very meaningful way. If so, government is looking to, sorry, Karen.
Not a problem. I just want to ask you, just I suppose maybe you were about to answer this, but I just want to ask you in terms of we're mentioning provinces, different provinces, and if provinces actually challenge this, do you foresee an intergovernmental legal battle similar to previous disputes between Treasury and provincial gambling boards?
Most certainly, and it's exactly the same as when I say it's a continuation of what's been going on with the National Gambling Board, where it recently used the Superbets matter in the SCA judgment to say, well, this has confirmed certain points, which in fact it didn't at all, as far as its ability to regulate online gambling in this country, and in fact was more favorable to the provinces and the industry, is that the industry, and when I say that, I mean the entire industry, meaning operators, manufacturers, suppliers, and the provincial gambling boards are pitted against national government. This is simply another rendition of what we've been seeing in relation to remote or online gambling for a number of years already.
So I wonder, and I suppose a lot of people are speaking to this as well, asking this question, if there is this tax that's brought in, could this actually cripple the legal industry and then fuel the illegal industry even more? Could this
Without a doubt.
So that's a concern.
Without any question about it, and again, the empirical evidence around the world shows that in countries that are overregulated, and that includes in relation to taxes, and that do not have balanced regimes, which take into account all the interests, including government, including the industry participants, and very much players, that the black market industry, the illegal industry, continues to grow. And it's a meaningful problem, and it's a meaningful problem particularly for parties, say, in South Africa and other highly regulated markets who are highly regulated, who have run incredibly serious businesses, substantial businesses that are highly regulated with substantial compliance requirements that do have player protection measures in place. And the money, you know, and we've heard Sean Summers talk about it recently, we've heard others talk about it recently, about monies going to the illegal market. Yes, it does. This will increase, no doubt, the illegal markets activity in South Africa.
Meanwhile, the gross domestic product of South Africa has risen by 0.5% in the third quarter.
Economic activity maintained an upward trend in the third quarter. 9 of the 10 measured industries reported positive growth, highlighting the broad-based albeit slower expansion. The mining sector saw a strong increase, largely fueled by production in platinum group metals, manganese ore and coal. Agriculture posted robust growth driven by increased economic activities in field crops, horticulture and animal products, while manufacturing showed modest growth. Household consumption increased, supported by low inflation and interest rate environment, while gross fixed capital formation measuring investment also went up.
Of all the things that we track under fixed capital formation, there's only one that went down, and that's residential. So if you can look at, I was trying to print the slide number, that I can read them for you quickly. So we look at transport equipment, we look at other assets, and I think in the previous quarter we mentioned that under this block of other assets, we look at things like your software and the like. So we also look at non-residential machinery and equipment, as well as construction work. So all of those that I've mentioned went up, and there's just one that went down.
Economist Elna Molman says the GDP outcome is in line with expectations and that positive growth is expected going forward.
This was quite a broad-based expansion. In other words, all of the sectors in the economy expanded from the previous quarter except for electricity. If we look at it from the spending side, then, as we expected, consumer spending continued growing, albeit at a slightly softer pace than in the second quarter. Fixed investment expanded in the third quarter, but this was almost entirely due to the public sector's investment growth rather than the private sector, where we only had marginal 0.1% growth from the previous quarter. But at least this is then further evidence of ongoing traction with government's growth-supportive fixed investment program. In general, we still expect economic growth to improve on a sustainable basis in the medium term.
The Reserve Bank has said it expects growth in the local economy to average 1.3% this year. Gloria Sefakomosi, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, fuel prices are set to increase in South Africa as from Wednesday.
The festive season will not be so merry for motorists as they will have to dig deeper into their pockets for fuel. The Department of Mineral and Petroleum Resources announced that fuel prices will increase across all main fuel types from Wednesday. The main contributing factor to higher local fuel prices are higher international product prices brought on by lower inventory levels ahead of the winter season in the Northern Hemisphere. Both grades of petrol will increase by 29 cents per litre. Both grades of diesel will go up between 65 cents and 85 cents per litre. Illuminating paraffin will be nearly 1 rand more expensive, while liquefied petroleum gas will increase by 24 cents.
The reason for these adjustments are the average Brent crude oil prices decreased slightly during the period under review, and the rand appreciated against the dollar during the same period. The international product prices of petrol and diesel were also affected by lower inventories ahead of the winter season in the Northern Hemisphere, as well as the planned and unplanned refinery shutdowns in Europe as they prepare for their winter season. The minister has approved the annual adjustment of industry margins in line with the regulatory accounting system. The petrol margins will increase by a net amount of 3.6 cents per litre. And the diesel and IP margins will increase by a net amount of 5.48 cents per litre. MRP increased by 60 cents per kilogram in the coastal areas and by 70 cents per kilogram in the inland market, in line with the PPI and CPI adjustment.
Let's move on to Tanzania, where Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan has apparently justified election killings.
Who are you?
And many in the country see her comments as tone-deaf, divorced from reality, especially when hundreds of people are believed to have died.
Well, Tanzania's president is defending a brutal crackdown on unarmed protesters after a disputed election, claiming without evidence that they intended to overthrow her government. Samia Suluhu Hassan is defending security forces accused of killing hundreds of demonstrators after her re-election in October. Protesters said the vote was rigged because the president's main rivals were either jailed or disqualified. Today, President Hassan refused to acknowledge their grievances, saying young people were paid to demonstrate and had no reason at all to be on the streets. A CNN investigation found that security forces fired at unarmed protesters who posed no threat, in some cases even hunting them down. President Hassan says the crackdown was necessary.
Serikali inawajibu. Tunaapa.
The government has a responsibility, and we swear to defend this country and its borders, to protect the safety of citizens and their property. And in that case, the force used is proportional to the threat. So when we're told that we used too much force in that event, what was the smallest amount of force? Were we supposed to wait until the protesters, who had planned to overthrow the government, to succeed?
CNN's Zahra Madaro is following developments from Nairobi, Kenya, and joins us now live. Larry, certainly we're just listening there to the leader, not only backing the security forces who carried out this brutal attack on unarmed protesters, but blaming the protesters for what she's called a manufactured event. Just take us through her comments and the reaction you're seeing.
Linda, in other jurisdictions, governments would open misconduct proceedings against any police officers who use excessive force against guidelines, but that's not what's happening in Tanzania. And some in the country see this statement from President Samia Suluhu Hassan as an admission that she gave the shoot to kill order, and she's justifying the reason why. She claims young people were paid to go on the streets across the country by foreigners who were jealous of Tanzania's development, and that her government had no option but to use proportional force because they intended to overthrow her government, and that is why they did this. So even though she's launched a commission of inquiry into the events of that week after the election, when she shut down the internet, declared a curfew, gagged the media, and many of these killings are believed to have happened, she does not appear to be taking any responsibility or accountability for that. And many in the country see her comments as tone-deaf, divorced from reality, especially when hundreds of people are believed to have died in these protests. We don't know the exact number. The opposition says as many as 2,000 could have been killed, probably more. The government says that number is hugely exaggerated, but has refused to confirm the death toll. She also claimed, without evidence, and falsely so, that the opposition refused to participate in this election. The truth is, the opposition was barred from participating. The main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, of the Chadema party, is in prison since April, charged with treason. He would face the death penalty if found guilty. And the second largest party, ACROZ Alendo, did not participate as well. But she says it's all foreigners' faults. And she had this pointed criticism for the European Union Parliament and in the foreigners criticizing the government.
Because of the shame that they would have lost the election, they have made up excuses supported by foreigners. They're shameless. Those foreigners keep saying Tanzania should do 1, 2, 3, then something will happen.
Who are you?
They think they're still our masters, our colonizers, because of the little money they gave us.
That is the alternate reality that President Samia Hassan has created, where her government is above criticism, and she claims that the opposition just didn't participate because they smelled defeat, because she's done such a great job in her first term that they were going to be defeated. The Electoral Commission gave her 98% of the vote, which many people say is improbable. But at the same time, Tundu Lissu, the main opposition leader, is still in parliament, and she says young people have announced they will have more protests on December 9, which is Tanzania's Independence Day. She says they're ready. Whether it's Independence Day or Christmas, they will be ready. So that was this hour-long conversation in front of Tanzania's Dar es Salaam's elders. That's the commercial capital, which many in the country kind of watched with bewilderment as she went on and on and on, justifying what happened in those weeks and appearing to give answers that her commission of inquiry is supposed to be answering, Linda.
Larry Madaro, thanks to you for that update.
President Hakainde Hichilema has called for stronger anti-corruption cooperation.
With a few months to go before the 2026 general election, the country is putting in place all necessary measures to ensure a credible process. The 2025 Zambia Anti-Corruption Conference has served as a platform for stakeholders to discuss ways of promoting integrity and transparency in the electoral cycle. President Hakainde Hichilema graced the official opening and stressed the importance of collaboration in combating corruption, highlighting Zambia's progress over 4 years.
We believe in the sum total of things over time. Zambians will see development, the economy rebounding. It's already happening. but there's still a debate. In a year or two or so, there will be no debate. Everything will be clear. But there's a rebound coming through out of this different approach to managing public affairs, including the fight against corruption. And one of the things that we've been confronting in this area is to also legislate so that we can cut out the old ills. The reasons that led us to acquiring a debt mountain a few years after cleaning our national balance sheet.
President Hichilema called for strengthening of confidential reporting channels and deepening operational cooperation among law enforcement agencies and stakeholders.
The ACC, in our view now, is cooperating more with the Auditor General than before. DEC is cooperating with the Auditor General than before. When we see that the Auditor General has no skills, we go out and buy skills in the market held by firms that are capable. You will see more of that going forward. And that will give us a stronger basis even when we prosecute. I believe you'll see a few more convictions in the ZAMSA area because of the work of the forensic auditors, which then the prosecution can utilize. Fine points, but very important. Because if you just, I also say to my colleagues, as the government were saying, do not arrest people before you do an investigation.
And President Hichilema said there is need for technology to enhance transparency and accountability.
Technology is important. We are lagging behind technology. We need to accelerate e-government, e-business, e-economy in order to take out the bureaucratic processes that seem to favor fidgeting. Procurements, service delivery to our citizens. So we are on the road as a government to improve replacement, improve replacement of manual processes, activities with digital processes, which reduces, not completely wipes out, reduces the chances for the thing we don't like.
And Corruption themselves. Commission Board Chairperson, Justice Evans Hamaundu, said there is need to revisit philanthropic activities by candidates participating in elections.
Now, in terms of electoral malpractices, philanthropic activities are not considered to constitute a malpractice. Indeed, our courts have so held in a number of cases. However, it cannot be denied that in terms of perception, they do create an unfair playing field as far as elections are concerned.
The European Union pledged its continued support in promoting transparency and integrity in Zambia's electoral processes.
The government of Zambia has invited the European Union to observe also the 2026 general elections. It would be an honor and a privilege to do so. These invitations that the EU has consistently received over the last 25 years reflect Zambia's willingness to submit its processes to independent scrutiny and the ambition to align with international best practices.
The president said his administration will continue implementing combined prosecution and non-conviction-based asset recovery approaches to accelerate recovery of stolen assets while preserving options of prosecution. Sharon Siame, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Mali's new mining code aims to boost the revenues and strengthen sovereignty.
Africa's third largest gold producer has concluded a long-running standoff with Barrick Gold. Both sides agreed to drop all charges, release detained employees, and the provisional administrations of the mine, and allow Barrick to regain operational control. Barrick will withdraw its arbitration cases, while Mali has extended the mine permit for 10 years. The company will also sign the 2023 mining code, a central point of tension as Mali seeks a greater share of mining revenue.
The 2019 mining code was still based on principles inherited from the 1991 framework.
Under that older system, the state received only about 20% of revenues. With the new provisions introduced in the 2023 Mining Code, this share can reach 30% and up to 35% when local companies are involved. In other words, we are seeing a significant increase between 15% and 20% depending on the setup, representing a major step forward for public finances and for the country's economic sovereignty.
Officials say additional revenues will support social protection and community development in mining regions. Analysts, however, note that the new policy environment will require investors to adapt to stricter regulations and increased state oversight.
The role of any state is to safeguard the public interest. As you know, Loulo-Gounkoto is the second largest gold mine in Africa and ranks among the 10 largest gold mines in the world. Loulo-Gounkoto accounted for 1/3 of Mali's mining revenues, yet it represents only 14% of Barrick Gold's mining income, Barrick being the second largest gold-producing company in the world. This dispute was therefore a lose-lose situation. Neither party gained from it. As you can see, there were 8,000 Malian employees at Loulo-Gounkoto, and the opportunity costs were very high, better late than never. But this dispute could have been resolved much earlier than now.
The revival of this revenue also represents a key lever for strengthening social protection and supporting communities that often bear the full impact of fluctuation in the mining sector.
This is also one of the state's key recommendations with the signing of this agreement. All subcontractors, companies, and service providers who had placed their workers on temporary layoff or even laid them off will resume their activities. This is already a very significant step within the agreement.
The settlement may ease tension, but it also signals deeper reforms in Mali mining governance. The coming months will show whether the new framework boosts both sovereignty and investor confidence. Mamadou Tapili, CGTN, Bamako.
Meanwhile, Egypt hosts Africa's biggest defense expo.
In a massive ceremony, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi inaugurated the fourth edition of the country's defense expo, EDEX. As the only defense and security show that covers Africa and the Middle East, Cairo continues to position itself as a security gateway to African markets.
This is our first time in EDEX show in Egypt, and we are so glad to be here. And it's a big opportunity entering the Egypt and the African market in defense industry. And usually in other international defense fairs, you can reach to all regions. But difference of the EDEX is you can reach directly the main point, which is Egypt and the African markets. So that's the reason why we are here.
More than 86 countries and 40,000 visitors are registered at this year's edition. So it's a great tool to promote Egypt's defense production facilities. About a quarter of the around 450 exhibitors are Egyptian firms. During the opening ceremony, Cairo debuted its new Rada 300 multi-caliber guided multiple launch rocket systems, its new Temsah series armored vehicles, and more. El-Sisi also showcased the locally produced South Korean K9A1 self-propelled howitzer.
As a military commander from Djibouti, I came to explore solutions that can benefit our country. I also want to see the products of global firms, as well as the production of our brother country Egypt. Its military production is of high quality, is diverse, and is very useful for us.
This is our fourth time in the Egypt Defense Exhibition. Each time we come with a new vessel, with a new project to show it our community. We usually come here to explore more, learn more about technologies.
China continues to solidify defense cooperation with Africa through EDEX, Egypt's manufacturing arm, the Arab Organization for Industrialization, and now signing a deal with Chinese defense firm Norinco. The agreement expands local production of advanced defense technologies at AOI's aircraft factory and lays the ground for future joint projects. Chinese firms also engage with the more than 100 military delegations here to discuss the latest technology in the defense field.
We think EDEX is a good chance for us to show our products in Egypt,
and also in Africa and the Middle East region. I think the AI will be the most important role in the AI, in the defense region, because the command and the control will be based on the AI to be analyzed to support the decision maker to make more effective actions.
Besides establishing a platform to boost continental defense cooperation and discussions, EDX this year is leaning towards civil-military integration to localize the manufacturing of military equipment through the private sector, a step that can further accelerate Africa's defense manufacturing independence. Adel Mahroui, CGTN, Cairo.
China's path to prosperity explores how new policies deepen global ties.
What does open these boats? There were much more. But on the other side, there was something I didn't know what it is. It was flat. And then over the years, the decades, well, we all know the story of Shanghai, of Pudong. It is what it is today. And the development is amazing. And being here and witnessing it is fantastic. I would never miss that in my life.
For Michael Krupa, a German businessman who first came from Hamburg, that nothing was a blank canvas. China began its reform and opening up policy in 1978, which has remained a cornerstone of the country's modernization.
Everybody knows that China was a big market and is a big market. When we started, end of the 90s, early 2000, global producers, exhibitors said, hey, we want to have a share of this market. Well, let's go to Shanghai and join Michael's exhibition. That's 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Most of them are still here.
In September of 2013, Shanghai inaugurated China's first pilot free trade zone. The zone was designed as a testing ground for reforms, smoother trade, financial innovation, and a gateway to global business.
It's all about convenience, service, safety, quality, not surprising.
Yeah.
We have everything, if you want, at a one-stop shop. We have the exhibition venue. Next door, we will have the Carry Hotel, belong to the Shangri-La Group. We have the restaurants, we have the subway, and we have the maglev train, which goes in 5 minutes from here to the airport in 8 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So for international travelers, that is a huge advantage.
This confidence is nowhere more tangible than at the exhibition center. Over the years, Shanghai has become a magnet for global business. On November 4, 1999, ground broke on a landmark project, the Shanghai New International Expo Center, China's first Sino-German expo venue. Its rise since then has been remarkable. From less than 1 million square meters of exhibition space in 2001 to more than 6 million square meters today, hosting 110 shows a year and pulling in over 6 million visitors. And Michael has been a key witness to this transformation. He moves around booth to booth, listening to voices from all over the world.
How's the show? Show's going really well. Yesterday was really busy, but lots of customers, lots of interest.
That's why you're here, right?
Exactly. That's why we're here. Also, I've been walking around, see a lot of new products, new innovations.
The essence of this high-level opening up lies in institutional innovation. China keeps cutting its negative list, the sectors that are off-limits to foreign investors. Manufacturing caps are gone, and entry is easier in value-added telecom, biotech, healthcare, and modern services, often trialed first in pilot-free trade zones before going nationwide. While each country's context differs, China's pilot, then scale method offers a practical roadmap. Test reforms in controlled zones, measure outcomes, adjust, and then expand.
With the development of China, we have the Mobile World Congress. There are only three in the world. One is in Barcelona, one is in Shanghai. The idea of the FTZ was also to attract high tech on a higher level.
It's a vivid snapshot of Shanghai's booming exhibition economy. By leveraging global platforms like the China International Import Expo, the city demonstrates its enduring and powerful appeal to the world.
This is the world's only trade fair at the national level dedicated to imports. During China's 14th five-year plan period from 2021 to 2025, China imported over $15 trillion worth of goods. So to put that number into perspective, that's around three times Germany's economic output in 2024.
China is completely ready to open its doors to foreign companies, foreign technology, to promote import. You have export, that's very common, but import, export, this is very, very rare.
For 8 years, the China International Import Expo, or the CIIE, the world's first national exhibition dedicated to imports, has been a major gateway into the Chinese market.
Now, with that, we have officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loisa Shimi, and also the Home Run Show with Helmut from 16:30, and the Business Economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 hours. From Indafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye, and have yourself a wonderful Wednesday afternoon.